are, Seaman. So sorry to have kept you waiting.
Not at all. How nice to see you again, Sir Everard. Shall we go into the lounge?
It is quieter there. We shall not be interrupted.
Excellent. Lead on. We can enjoy yarning about the old days in Africa.
Well,
everything proceeds according to plan, I trust?
Except that I'm expected to call upon the Princess Iderstrom at 7 o'clock.
I see no tragedy in that. The princess is a woman of sense, and while I cannot recommend you take her entirely into your confidence, I still think that a middle course can be judiciously pursued.
Rubbish! The princess has indisputable claims upon me as Leopold von Ragerstein, claims which would altogether interfere with the career of Everard Dominey.
My friend, I'm a man of commerce, and I do things in a business way. Let us take stock of our position. 3 months ago, we met by appointment at a certain hotel in Cape Town. We were unknown to one another. I had only heard of the Baron von Ragerstein as a devoted German citizen engaged in an important enterprise in East Africa by special intercession of the Kaiser on account of a certain unfortunate happening in Hungary.
I killed a man in a duel. It was not an unforgivable act.
Oh, there are duels and duels to become the lover of the wife.
I had no wish to kill Prince Iderstrom, nor was it at my desire that we met at all. The prince fought like a madman until he slipped and fell upon the point of my sword.
Let that pass. I do not understand the etiquette of these matters. I simply look upon you as a culprit in the eyes of our master, the Kaiser. And I feel that he has a right to demand much from you in the way of personal sacrifice.
Perhaps you'll tell me what more he could have. I have spent many years in a godless, fever-ridden country, and now at last I am able to take up the work for which I was originally intended, to transform myself into an English gentleman. And I think you'll admit that so far I've done so with great success.
All you say is granted. Although you were supposed to consult with me as to your choice of identity.
I simply saw a great chance when the Englishman blundered into my camp and I took it.
And you wear your new identity well. You have made it uncommonly expensive, but we do not grudge the money.
But I could not return home to a poverty-stricken domain. I should have held no place whatever in English social life.
Again, I make no complaint. Neither must there be any stint to our loyalty.
In this instance, it is not a matter of loyalty. Everard Dominey cannot throw himself at the feet of the Princess Iderstrom while her love affair with von Ragerstein is still remembered. Just think, the question of our identities might crop up any day, and there are still many who remember the likeness between us.
Very well. What do you propose?
That you see the princess at once and point out to her that for political reasons I am and must remain Sir Everard Dominey until my mission here is completed.
So be it. I will go and have an understanding with the princess. Dine with me here at 8.
Well, what news?
I have done your errand. And I confess that I found her a lady of somewhat overpowering temperament.
But did she agree to behave in
the princess understands the situation. She will do nothing. You and she will meet within the course of the next few hours.
What?
On reasonable terms. But, to proceed, I have decided that it is time for you to meet the person who is chiefly responsible for your presence in England. Our ambassador, Prince Temenov. Now, the first idea you have to get out of your head is that you are a spy. You are nothing of the sort. You are a free agent. Live yourself thoroughly into the life of Sir Everard Dominey. For the rest, we'll require you to concentrate wholly and entirely upon Temenov.
Well, I expect you to work with him.
Empty your mind of all preconceived ideas. Your duties with regard to Prince Temenov will grow upon you gradually as the situation develops. Now, I have made an appointment for you to see him at 11 o'clock tonight.
Tonight?
At the embassy. Remember, you know nothing. You are waiting instructions. Leave the talking to him. Be particularly careful not to drop him a hint of what is coming. Take care not to disturb him. He is a missioner of peace, and so are you.
I begin to understand.
You shall understand everything when the time comes for you to take a hand. And do not forget that your usefulness to our great cause will depend upon your being able to establish and maintain your position as an English gentleman. So far, all has gone well.
Perfectly. Now, you must remember, though, that there is your end to keep up. Berlin will be receiving frantic messages from East Africa as to my disappearance. Not even my immediate associates were in the secret.
That is all understood. A Dr. Schmidt has been wasting much money sending frantic cables.
Schmidt was a very faithful associate.
He has been a very troublesome friend. It seems that the natives got their stories mixed up concerning the Englishman who was apparently died in the bush. However, all this has been dealt with. The only real dangers are here.
Well, I have at any rate been accepted by my cousin, the Duchess of Worcester. Oh, and incidentally, I've discovered that one far-seeing person in England knows that a war is inevitable.
Indeed.
Yes. The Duke of Worcester.
Oh. A brainless man obsessed by one idea. It's queer how these fanatics often stumble upon the truth. But that reminds me, His Grace has a little meeting tonight in the Holborn Town Hall. I shall go along. Why don't you come with me?
No. No, my mind is too full of other things. I'll rest in my room until it's time to go to the embassy. 11 o'clock, you say?
I am very glad to see you here tonight, von Reichenstein. For 5 minutes, I desire to talk to your real self. After that, and for the rest of your time in England, I will respect your new identity. Africa has changed you very little. Do you remember our previous meeting in Saxony?
I remember it perfectly, Your Excellency.
Ah, His Majesty knew how to keep court in those days. You know, of course, that I entirely disapprove of your present position here.
I gathered as much, Your Excellency.
I know quite well that you form part of a network of espionage in this country, a network which I consider entirely unnecessary. But I have no doubt that you are here with the same object as I am. That object, which the Kaiser has declared to me with his own lips, is nearest to his heart, to cement the bonds of friendship between Germany and England.
And you believe, sir, that this is possible?
I am convinced of it. Just as I am convinced that there is not a single statesman in this country who desires a war with Germany.
But there are many in our own country who look forward to a war with England as inevitable. Germany must become the greatest empire in the world. She must climb there, as one of our own friends once said, with her foot upon the neck of the British lion.
You are out of date, my friend. I see now why they have sent you to me. Those days have passed. There is room in the world for both Great Britain and for Germany. The disintegration of Russia in the very near future is a certainty. So it is eastward that we must look for any great extension of territory.
I see. These things have been decided.
Absolutely. They form the soul of my mission here. My mandate is one of peace. And the more I see of English statesmen and the more I understand the British outlook, the more sanguine I am as to the success of my efforts. That is why all this espionage of seamen seems to me to be both unwise and unnecessary.
And my own mission?
Its nature is not as yet divulged. But if, as I understand it, it is to become closely connected with mine, then I am sure you will find that it also is concerned with peace. And now just one word more. The Princess Eiderstrom is upstairs.
Stephanie? Here?
Waiting for a word with you. She insists that I present Sir Everard Dominy to her.
I need scarcely point out to you, sir, that any association between the princess and myself will greatly increase the difficulties of my position here.
Oh, I quite appreciate that. Both Seaman and I have endeavored to reason with her. But as you are doubtless aware, the princess is a woman of very strong will. She is also very powerfully placed here. And it is the urgent desire of the court at Berlin to placate in every way the Hungarian nobility. You will understand that I speak from a political point of view only. I cannot ignore the fact of your unfortunate relations with the princess, but in considering the present position you will, I am sure, remember the greater interests.
I shall accept Your Excellency's guidance in the matter.
Very well, then. Come with me, Sir Everard Dominy, and I will present you to my wife.
We are delighted to welcome you to London, Sir Everard, and I hope that we shall often see you here.
Thank you, Princess.
Now, I want to present you to my cousin. She is very interested in you, though I must tell you frankly, it is because of your likeness to a very dear friend of hers. Stephanie, this is Sir Everard Dominy, the Princess Eiderstrom.
You have forgiven me for my insistence at the Carlton Grill this morning, I hope.
It was hard for me to believe that you were not indeed the person for whom I mistook you.
Other people have spoken to me of the likeness. It is a matter of regret to me that I can claim to be no more than a simple Norfolk baronet.
Without any previous experience of European courts?
Without any at all.
You are not going to bury yourself in Norfolk, Sir Everard.
Oh, Norfolk is very near to London these days, Princess, and I have experienced more than my share of solitude during the last few years.
You must dine with us one night and tell us about Africa. My husband would be so interested.
You're very kind.
Will you be so kind as to see me home, Sir Everard? Afterwards, my car can take you on wherever you choose to go.
I shall be very happy to, Princess.
At last, Leopold, we are alone.
Princess, my name is not Leopold, I am Everard Domini.
Oh, I know that you are very obstinate. Very obstinate and very devoted to your marvelous country. But you have a soul, Leopold. You know that there are human duties as great as any your country ever imposed on you.
Listen to me. Until the hour strikes, I must remain to you as to the world, alone or in a crowd, Everard Domini.
Leopold, I understand. You are afraid that I shall betray our love. Oh, I am full of impulses and passions, as you know, but I have restraint. What we are to one another when we are alone, no soul in this world need know. I will be careful, I swear it.
Oh, Princess.
I swear it. You shall come and see me as seldom as you wish. Oh, but don't treat me like this. Tell me you have come back. Oh, Leopold.
I cannot take advantage of your feeling for Leopold von Reckerstein. He is in Africa. Perhaps someday he will come back to you.
Let me look at you. Is this some ghastly change, or are you an impostor? My heart is growing chilled. Are you the man I have waited for all these years? The man who slew my husband and left me?
I was exiled, you know that. So far as other things are concerned, I am exiled now.
We have arrived. Will you come in with me? For a moment?
If you will permit me to pay you a visit, it will give me great pleasure. I will call, if I may, on my return from Norfolk.
So be it. My chauffeur will take you wherever you want to go. And remember, I do not admit defeat. This is not the last word between us.
Seaman, I have discovered the greatest danger I shall have to face during my entire enterprise.
Shh! Be careful! Now, what is this danger?
The Princess Idastrom.
Really? You surprise me. I have considered the matter. I cannot see any great difficulty.
Then you're wholly ignorant of the princess's temperament and disposition. Stephanie Idastrom is Hungarian, born and bred. You don't seriously suppose that after all these years, after all she's suffered, she's going to be contented with an emasculated form of friendship? She's made it very plain tonight that she's going to be content with nothing of the sort.
What takes place between you in private?
Rubbish! The princess is an impulsive, passionate, distinctly primitive woman with a good deal of the wild animal in her still. Plots or political necessities are not likely to count a snap of the fingers with her.
But surely she must understand that your country has claimed you for a great work.
She is not German. On the contrary, like a great many Hungarians, I think she rather dislikes us. Her only concern is the personal question between us. She considers that every moment of the rest of my life should be devoted to her.
Perhaps it is as well that you have arranged to go down to Domini tomorrow. Don't worry, I will think out a scheme. Something must be done to pacify her. To my mind, your greatest difficulty will be encountered tomorrow. You know what you have to deal with down at Domini?
Yes, I'm prepared.
You remember that when we talked over your plans at Cape Town, you showed me a picture of...
Of Lady Domini? Yes, I remember.
Yeah, have one more look at it?
Of course. There you are.
Thank you. I tell you, my friend, I would sooner have a dozen of your princesses than to deal with the original of that picture. Thank you.
It's still a fine house. We've kept the old place weathertight somehow or other. I don't think you'll miss the timber much. We've taken it as far as possible from the outlying woods.
Any from the Blackwood, Mangan?
Not a stump. And for a very excellent reason. Not one of the woodmen would ever go near the place.
The superstition remains, then?
The villagers are absolutely rabid about it. There are at least a dozen who declare that they have seen the ghost of Roger Marston, and a score more who will swear by all that is holy that they've heard his call at night. The idea is that the ghost makes his way out from the Blackwood and sits on the terrace underneath Lady Domine's window. Or Buncombe, of course. But I can assure you that every servant and caretaker we've had there has given notice within a month. That is the sole reason why I hadn't ventured to recommend long ago that you should get rid of Mrs. Marston.
So his mother is still in attendance upon Lady Domine?
Simply because we couldn't get anyone else to stay there. And her ladyship positively declines to leave the hall. Between ourselves, I think it's time a change was made. We'll have a chat about it after dinner, if you've no objection. You see, we've left most of the trees in the park.
So the old wall's done, I see.
That wall has been down, to my knowledge, for the past 20 years.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course, I'd forgotten.
You won't find many familiar faces to welcome you home, I'm afraid. Just old Middleton, the keeper, and Lovibon, the gardener. No one at all indoors, except Mrs. Marston. All the present staff are new importations. Ah, well, here we are. Middleton?
Sir?
Here's your master come home. Lovibond, give Parkins a hand with the luggage, will you, please?
Good day, Middleton.
I'm right glad to see you home, Squire.
You've not changed much, Lovibond.
Thank you, Squire. I can't say the same for you, sir. Them foreign powers has filled you out and out, haven't you? I'll take the liberty of saying that I should never have recognised you, and that's a fact.
This is Parkins, your butler, recently engaged in London.
Sir,
Parkins.
There is no place in this house for you, Everard Dominic.
Mrs. Marston.
I wrote last night to stop you, but you've shown indecent haste in coming. There's no place here for a murderer. Get back where you came
from. My good woman, this is really too much.
I've not come to bandy words with lawyers. I've come to speak to him. Can you face me, Everard Dominic, who murdered my son and made a madwoman of your wife?
Mrs. Marston, return to your duties at once. And understand that this house is mine to enter or leave when I choose.
The house may be yours, but there's a part of it at least in which you won't dare show yourself.
Hush,
you
woman.
Forget yourself, Mrs. Marston. Be so good as to return to your mistress this minute. Announce my arrival and say that I wait only for her permission before presenting myself in her apartments.
Sir Everard!
Those are brave words. You've come back a harder man. Let me look at you. There's things in your face I miss.
Mrs. Marston, you will treat your master with the respect to which his position here entitles him.
Respect? What respect have I for the murderer of my poor boy? Respect? Well, if he stays here against my bidding, maybe her ladyship will show him what respect means.
But don't just stand there gawping, Parkins. Get that luggage in at once.
Right, right, sir.
My dear Sir Everard, I am most distressed that this should have occurred. I thought Mrs. Marston would probably be sullen, but I had no idea that she would dare to attempt such an outrage.
She is still the only companion whom Lady Domine will tolerate.
I fear so. Nevertheless, we must see Dr. Harrison in the morning. But it must be understood that if Mrs. Marston is suffered to remain, she adopts an entirely different attitude. I shall pay her a visit myself after dinner.
Well, let's go in, shall we? Lead on, Mangan.
Ah, it's a grand view from these library windows, especially since we had a few of the trees cut down.
Sir Mangan, it's the popular belief down here that I killed Roger Marston.
Well, the popular belief seems to march fairly well with the facts. At the time of your unfortunate visit to the hall, Miss Felbrigg was living practically alone at the vicarage following her uncle's death, with Mrs. Marston as housekeeper. Roger Marston's infatuation for her was known throughout the neighbourhood, and a source of great annoyance to Miss Felbrigg herself. I'm convinced that at no time did she ever give him the slightest encouragement.
Has anyone ever suggested the contrary?
Not a soul. Nevertheless, when you came down, fell in love with Miss Felbrigg and married her, everyone felt there would be trouble.
Marston was a lunatic. We met at the north end of the Black Wood one evening, and he attacked me like a madman. When I got back to the hall, my arm was broken, I was covered with blood and only half conscious. By some cruel stroke of fortune, almost the first person I saw was Lady Dominy. The shock was too much for her. From that moment, she developed a homicidal mania against me. That was what drove me out of the country, not the fear of being arrested for having caused the death of Roger Marston. I just took trial for that any time. It was absolute self-defense.
As a matter of fact, you were perfectly safe from arrest. The body of Roger Marston has never been found from that day to this.
Then I suppose it was the disappearance of the body which has given rise to all this talk about his spirit inhabiting the Black Wood.
Without a doubt.
Well, after dinner, I will tell you a few African superstitions which will make this one seem positively anemic. I'm very glad you came down here with me, Mangan. I find it very difficult to get back into the atmosphere of those days. I even find it hard sometimes to believe that I'm the same man.
Not so hard as I have done, more than once.
Tell me in what respects you consider me changed.
Well, you seem to have lost a certain pliability, or perhaps I ought to call it a looseness of disposition. But there are other things. Well, for a trifling instance, you don't drink port like any Dominie I ever knew.
I'm afraid I'm not very fond of port.
Not fond of port?
Well, not anymore, I should say. You see, in the bush, we drank a simply frightful amount of spirits.
You haven't the appearance of ever having drunk anything.
Ah, the Dominie constitution, I suppose. Yes, what is it, Parkins?
I have served coffee in the library, sir. And Mr. Meddleson has just called in to have a word with you. He seems in a very nervous state, sir.
I'll tell him I'll see him in the library.
Yes, sir.
Well, what is it, Middleton? Bad night for you to be out?
To save it being a worse one that I'm here, Squire. I've come to ask you a favour and then to beg you to grant it for your own sake. You'll not sleep in the Oak Room tonight.
Why not?
It's next to her ladyship's. And, well, Squire, that's to say I...
Say exactly what you wish to, Middleton.
I can't get rightly into touch with you, Squire, and that's a fact. The shape of you seems larger and your voice harder.
I've had a rough time, Middleton. Never mind. Speak to me just man to man.
It was I who first met you, Squire, when you trotted home that night across the park with the blood streaming down your face. I heard her ladyship go into hysterics. I saw her laugh and sob like a maniac, and God help us, that's what she's been ever since. I was by your side, Squire, when her ladyship caught up the knife and ran at you, and as you well know, it was I, seizing her from behind, that saved a double tragedy that night. And it was me who went for the doctor the next morning when she'd stolen into your room that night and missed your throat by a bare inch. I heard her call to you. Heard her threat. It was a mad woman's threat, Squire. But her ladyship is a mad woman at this moment, and with a knife in her hand, you'll never be safe in this house, Squire.
Then we must see to it that she's not allowed a knife.
Oh, I make sure of that with old Mother Marston by her side. Her ladyship's mad because of the horror that night. But Mother Marston is mad with hate, and there isn't a week passes that Roger Marston's spirit doesn't howl for your blood beneath her window.
Well, it's very good of you to warn me, Middleton, but I can lock my door, can't I?
Lock the door of the Oak Room? What good would that do? You know well enough that the house is riddled with secret passages. The Oak Room's not for you this night, Squire. Why, it's hoping to get you there that's keeping them quiet.
Tell us what you meant when you spoke of the howling of Roger Marston's spirit.
Just that, sir. It's round the house most weeks.
A howl, you call it?
Aye. Like a dog what's hurt itself with a touch of human in its throat.
Well, I'm obliged to you for your kind warning, but now, if you will excuse us, we have urgent business to discuss.
Yes, Squire, of course. But you'll not sleep in the Oak Room tonight.
I'll remember. And thank you.
Then I'll bid you good night, gentlemen.
You made me feel positively uncomfortable.
I noticed it. Well, I'm not going to pretend that it was a pleasant conversation myself.
Where will you sleep tonight?
Well, there's obviously only one place. I can't disappoint anyone. I shall sleep in the Oak Room, of course.
Everard Dominy.
What's that?
Who the devil?
Lie still. If you move, you will die. There is a knife at your throat. Keep quite still.
Why do you wish to kill me?
You've cut me. You must be very quiet. If you speak, it will be the end. I wish to look at you. Move your head slowly. Nearer to the candle.
Oh, my God. She's disappeared.
The writer and satirist Joe Queenan has spent lockdown looking at America through 10 journeys. He's tracing adventures from the Pilgrim Fathers in 1620 to the first men on the moon in 1969. It includes the trip made by the man who claimed Louisiana in 1682.
Louisiana was not an acquisition that impressed Louis XIV, after whom it had been named. And so for a while it was taken over by the Spanish, and then it was settled by the Germans, and then it was settled by Haitians, whom I presume were running away, and eventually it was settled by the Cajuns. These were French settlers fleeing from the Northeast when the British took over Canada. That area had been called Acadia.
And from Acadia, we get the word Cajun.
Mais oui, monsieur. It's amazing how it keeps changing hands. Louisiana was then sold to the American government by the French in 1803. The cost? Around $15 million, would double the size of the United States. Many in the U.S. Senate thought the territory useless, but it did propel the new and improved, albeit pint-sized, America out towards the West. We had been small, now we were big. It's worth stressing that by 1860, just before the Civil War, the population of Louisiana was, according to the census, 47% enslaved.
47%
enslaved. 47%.
Joe Queenan makes 10 journeys that built the United States. They take in the forced relocation of Native Americans by President Andrew Jackson. That's the same Andrew Jackson whose statue was nearly pulled down in Washington in June. Plus the crossing of the Bering Strait and the movement of African Americans up to Chicago and Detroit from the South. From the Mayflower to the Moon and Back Again is available now on BBC Sounds. America is waiting.